market.
The S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that is never, ever in correction territory. I'm Scott Phillips, and with me, as always, is Anirban Mahanty. G'day, Doc.
Good day, Captain. How are you?
I'm exceptionally well, mate. Despite the volatility, yesterday was a tough old day on the market. Today might just be better. We're recording this before the market opens, so we'll find out. Mate, we are going to talk a little bit about that today. We're also going to talk about one of the most painful drops of yesterday, a three-letter company starting with A. We'll leave that to hanging there, let listeners guess, and we'll come with that later. We'll also talk a little bit about some tech giant machinations in the US, Alphabet and Amazon. Alphabet is Google, of course, both reporting overnight. And, you know, we know that our market is very much led, particularly the tech stocks, by what those guys do. So we'll have a little bit of a look at that. And we'll finish off by talking about some market volatility and dipping into, as we love to do, the foolish investing mailbag. All right, mate, let's get on with it. So the ASX is in official correction territory, the AFR tells me this morning.
You have to describe what a correction is, right?
I
have to describe.
Our listeners know what I think about correction. You describe what a correction is, then I'll have my little rant, little mini rant.
So correction, by the definition is that if you look at the most recent or the recent high the market has hit, if you're going 10% or below that recent high, then it's a correction. If it's 9.9%, it's not a correction.
Says who?
Well, says they.
Who's they?
They.
They.
People on television.
Those people. The market, right?
Those people. The market people.
Mate, I hate the term correction. You never correct up. We only ever correct down, which to me is bizarre when you think the market goes up more than it goes down, yet a correction is down. Drives me bananas. And the fact, as you said, that at 9.9% everything's fine, at 10.00001% officially it's a correction.
It's very bad.
I hate it. It's just stupid,
so
right?
The number 10 is a nice number. That's a nice whole round number. Why don't you like number 10?
It must mean something then. I must have to do something different at 10.0% than I did at 9.9%. Maybe I have to, I don't know, what am I supposed to do with that information? And not only is it useless, it's just there's nothing indicative of about that number, is there?
No, it can go down minus 20%.
Up to plus 10, right?
Plus 10, yeah. But still a nice round number. That's what it is. It's a nice, beautiful round
number.
Mate,
if I got paid in round numbers, I'd be more than happy. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter to me and my investments whether we're down 9.9 or 10.1. Drives me bananas.
I'll take $10 more. I mean,
mate, if you've got to do round numbers, I'll put some extra zeros on that. Don't worry about that. We'll ask the boss for some more cash. Mate, we are probably the only two people, although I did note that one of my Twitter followers and someone I follow on Twitter, Greg McKenna, is also sharing my disgust with the concept. The rest of the market, though, seems to not feel as we do and are embracing the term, and it's all over the headlines. $160 billion wiped off the ASX in October. The market's down 8.8% as of last night, just for the month, and we're still going. What's going on out there? What are we to think?
I just love the wiped out fact. I just love it. It's like, you know, who wiped out? Did you take a cloth and wipe it out or what? What does wiped out really mean? It just basically means that, you know, your portfolio value is down. Or if you had bought the market, it's down. But, you know, if you have not sold anything, nothing has happened.
$163 billion wiped off the market. All right, yeah, okay. So let's go past that. The market is down the best part of 9% over the last 25 odd days. So call it 20-ish trading days. Why is the market down, mate? What are we to make of the October malaise?
Well, can I start by saying the market occasionally goes down. That's what the markets do. The markets, you know, they go up sometimes. Yes. Sometimes they go down. On average, they go up more, which is why we invest in the market, because the market on average goes up more. And, you know, it has just decided that it hasn't been down for a while. So, you know, it's like having the flu. You get the flu once in a while. You know, why'd you get the flu? Because, you know, you get the flu.
Okay, but if I have let's say our listeners out there have been saving and investing for a little while, they're probably, you know, they've been around the block a couple of times. Mm. Let's say they've got $500,000 portfolio. Mm-hmm. Over the course of October, they lost the value of a brand spanking new car. Mm-hmm. That's got to feel pretty crappy, right?
It does. So, I mean, it would feel crappy, but, you know, the analogy, I was at dinner yesterday, and the thing I told people is, okay, people complain when the stock market goes down by, say, 5%, 6%, yes. 10%, because, you know, we have a live auction market where every day you know the price. Nobody knows the price of the housing market, so therefore nobody really complains about the housing market, right? It's, you know what you see. So, I mean, I think some perspective is important. I mean, the market has been, you know, going up for a while, and it's gone down a bit. I mean, Yeah, you could make up all sorts of reasons, you know, that earnings growth are not keeping up with sort of the multiples people are paying. Maybe the valuations were a bit rich and therefore, you know, there has been a pullback. People are worried about, things like the trade wars that are going on that can have global implications. People are worried about increasing interest rates. So there's a lot of things that people worry about. And occasionally when a lot of people start worrying about stuff, as they say, people take profits off, they take profits off the table and the market kind of goes down.
All true. So are we to... So there's plenty of headlines in the paper saying this might be the beginning of something worse. What are you thinking about when you're looking at the market right now? Are you worried we've got further falls to come? Is this a temporary blip? Were we too expensive now? We're kind of fair value. Were we fair value now? We're cheap. How are you thinking about the market right now?
Predicting what the market is going to do next in the short term is very hard. That said, economy here in Australia is strong. We have some issues, housing and so on and so forth. But the economy is strong. Unemployment is low. GDP growth is good. Globally, the economy seems to be doing good. The interest rates are going up in the US because the market is really strong there. And unemployment is really low. And they're just worried that, the economy might overheat. So they're increasing interest rates to take it to what they call normalizing interest rates. So I just don't see anything. The trade war is a bit of a concern. And I think, those sort of things can easily go out of hand. And it's the trade war between two of the largest economies in the world. So that's not really nice. But aside from that, we're making progress. Progress is happening. People are talking about going to Mars. There are faster, better planes. Planes are flying longer distances. People are traveling the world.
Indeed.
Good things are happening. 10 years ago, you didn't have the smartphone. Today, and everybody has a smartphone. Great things are happening. So I just don't see... I think the human race continues making progress. And, by investing in the stock market, we get to participate in that progress.
Yep.
It's the best way to participate in that progress, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
And... to me, a pullback is a buying opportunity. I've bought some things over the last couple of weeks. And I think, if people have some cash on the sidelines, it is not nice to look at the number going down and it feels painful and it kind of hurts.
It
and
really
you know,
does.
I get the bad moods. It's like, I'm saying all these things. It's not that I'm immune to it. It's, and I don't like looking at it.
None of us do.
But you take, if you don't need the money now and don't need it for the next, 3 to 5 years, then, this is nothing. It doesn't really matter. And, you should really need to look out 3 to 5 years. That's what I try to do.
Exactly.
Ask me when it's gone down another 10% and I might have a different view. I think you just need to think forward and, these things happen.
At one point, we'll discuss dollar cost averaging, but one of the things I try and comfort myself and our listeners and members and readers with is that if you're going to commit a certain dollar value to the market every fortnight or month or quarter or 6 months, as long as you're investing regularly, the market kind of takes care of, to some degree, it's a little bit like, for those who remember economics or commerce at school, remember the automatic stabilizers, the whole idea that, when more people are out of work, then welfare goes up, which puts money into the economy. When more people are working, more tax goes up, which takes money out of the economy. That automatic stabilizers idea that it kind of retards growth and then supports weakness. To some degree, I kind of feel like that with investing and with dollar cost averaging. If you're going to put, let's pick numbers, right? Let's say $1,000 a month, sake of the exercise. When the market's really, really high, you get fewer shares. When the market's really, really low, you get many, many more shares. And over time, that actually helps you because it means you're putting more, you're getting a larger exposure to those companies you're buying when the prices are cheaper and a slightly lower exposure, at least on a share count perspective, when the share prices are higher. If you're investing regularly over time, and as you say, mate, because the market goes up over time on average and goes up quite strongly over time on average, investing regularly despite the market and trying to tune out the noise, trying to tune out the volatility is a pretty good idea, I reckon.
I like it.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, what I can't help today with is those poor bloody shareholders of AMP.
tea.
Oh, I feel bad for them.
The shares fell 24% yesterday, and that would be a lot in anyone's language, and it is. Unfortunately for AMP shareholders, they're kind of used to the share price falling. This has been an absolute disaster of a story. The shares closed on Thursday night. So again, we're recording this Friday morning. Thursday night at $2.50. Only 3.5 years ago, they were $6.80.
Oh.
And it's been a tale of absolute woe ever since. And in fact, if we go back, I've just pulled up a chart here. If we go back to 2007, so we're talking just on 10 years ago, the shares were at $10.24 is the number I found here. $10.63 in April it was. So there you go. Just over 11 and a half years ago, shares at $10.63. Now at $2.50, a 15-year low on the poor old AMP share price. Buying opportunity?
No.
That's a bit disappointing. Yeah, well, so what would you say? We can't give individual advice, but what would you say to shareholders of AMP right now? Do they wait for the recovery? Do they sell their shares? Do they bunker down? Do they buy more? What do you do?
So, okay, I'll start with a caveat. The first thing is that I haven't looked at AMP that closely, and largely I have not looked at it closely because, you know, as a business, it looks like lots of things going wrong with it. Now, it's been hauled in front of the, you know, the Royal Commission for all sorts of things. It's an old school type of business. It's got, you know, life insurance, it's got wealth management, and it's got all these things that are intertwined with each other in sort of the, the, you know, financial advice industry. One of the things that the Royal Commission is looking at is, you know, is that sort of advice where it's coming from an intertwined, you know, products and therefore that, you know, there are these, I wouldn't call them kickbacks, but, you know, the commissions that people get because, you know, you were able to sell this product and therefore you were able to sell that product. Those sort of things are going to hurt AMP. So AMP, I believe, has decided to part with its life insurance business. That's going to add some cash back to their to the balance sheet. But the other big news was that it's losing billions of dollars of fund management flow from its platforms because, you know, the big thing in the platform, or when I say platform, essentially I mean these super fund money and, you know, other sort of, you know, managed funds that are going into these platforms. So the independent platforms are basically leading that revolution. You know, they're independent, they're not tied to any big bank or, you know, AMP, and more money is flowing into them than AMP and the others. So and you just, when you know, they have inflows and these guys have outflows, and AMP is very badly hit because of the noise that has, you know, come through the Royal Commission and so on. So I don't know what the P is. I don't know what, you know, so when I say P, I don't know what the valuation, I mean the valuation is, and I don't know what their actual balance sheet situation is, but everything that is happening to them right now seems to be bad news, right? And it's very difficult to arrest these, this flow, outflow funds. You know, there are other,
what do you do?
You know,
right?
It's just, you actually have got, you know, the competition is better, smarter, faster, leaner, more agile. And so, I mean, you know, without knowing much of the details, I personally would feel, I'd be worried. I mean, in extreme opportunities, we have recommended independent platforms. So, you know, where my thinking is that independent platforms is what's going to grow.
Interesting.
But, and not the platforms that are, you know, the old school platforms from the bank and the insurance industry. So that's what I feel. So, you know, my money would not be on AMP, but would be, you know, on the others.
Interesting. Mate, I was asked by one of our team, I can't remember who it was, might have been Andrew Leggett, but you might remind me if it was someone else. They said, well, would you rather be the CEO of Myer or AMP? and so if, inherent in the question, by the way, is these are two very structurally challenged, difficult, you know, tough businesses. Maybe you wouldn't miss the CEO's job on your worst enemy, though you'd probably take the pay packet. And I have to say, it was a really easy decision for me to answer that. As much as, given the binary choice, right, the option C is neither, thank you very much, unless I get the money. But given taking that off the table and make forced to choose, it's very, very simple. I'm gonna be the CEO of Myer every single time because Myer has some really structural challenges, but a very strong brand platform. I can see a way you could revitalize Myer. I don't think you're necessarily going to make more money for shareholders from Myer from this point forward, by the way. I think they're both in some degree of structural decline and challenge. But I think you can, as much as this is usually a term that's used for derisively, I think you can shrink Myer to greatness. I think there is a there is a role. If you say to me, how do you take AMP's consolidated, intertwined business of financial planning, funds management, life insurance, and try and twist that and remold it in a way that, in a Royal Commission world, where they're trying to break down that nexus between financial planning and funds management. This was AMP's entire business model, right? Back in our parents' prime days, AMP was the preeminent, I think I've said this before, the preeminent national financial services company. So there was Commonwealth Bank, which was always national because it was a government-owned bank, mm-hmm. whole lots of state banks, state bank of almost every state. Westpac was around as the Bank of New South Wales. National Australia Bank was kind of there. ANZ, but AMP was the brand, it was the financial services brand. People sought out the AMP life insurance salesman, the AMP financial planner. And that was unfortunately the beginning of these banks and financial institutions take us for something of a ride when it comes to scraping fees and charges and horrible amounts of money out of us all because we were too kind of unaware or lazy or simply unprepared to have a fight. The Royal Commission is having that fight for us, and AMP's very business model is now at risk. They've got underperforming funds. Mm-hmm. They've got conflicted financial planning, or allegedly conflicted, maybe I should say, or at least challenged financial mm-hmm. planning. I don't know how I fix that business. I think you've got to force them apart somehow. But to do that, you've got to believe there's a business model for AMP's independent financial planners, independent people. Mm-hmm. You've got to believe their funds can somehow make some money and deliver market-beating gains. Mm-hmm. It's a lot has to go right. Now, maybe one of our US colleagues, Bill Barker, likes to say that the job you want is you want an easy act to follow. It's probably not hard to follow the AMP's kind of, you know, last four or five CEOs and the position that it's in. And maybe it's cheap enough and broken enough that maybe you can go in and fix it just by dint of it being so bad. Mm. But gee, it's a tough ask. I don't know how you do it.
Tough.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
From the sublime to the ridiculous, or maybe from the ridiculous to the sublime, mate, let's check in very quickly on the US tech stocks. Now, by way of structure, we've all heard about the FANGs. Mm-hmm. This is Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, mm-hmm. F-A-N-G. Sometimes Apple is added there with a second A called FANGs or something.
I just don't know how people would create an acronym and miss out on the, you know, biggest, the best company in the world. But anyways, that's them. It's just like the collection.
Here we go. Yeah. So the idea of the FANGs kind of being, they were the powerhouse of the US market for many years, to the point now where they are, as you said, Apple is the biggest company in the US. Amazon, I want to say, is number two.
Probably number two, or maybe now Microsoft is number two. Who knows?
Right. But if you think about sort of the US market of 20 years ago was dominated by General Electric, ExxonMobil, the fuel company, plenty of others whose names escape me, AT&T, the old telco back in the telco glory days. There was plenty of big industrial-ish kind of US companies that were, you know, Caterpillar, that were driving the US market. Fast forward a couple of decades, not only are the FANGs the hot stocks, the fastest growing stocks, they're also now the biggest stocks. So not only the FANGs impact on our tech sector by kind of reputational damage or otherwise, they also, frankly, drive the US market, which means that our entire ASX is impacted by where the US market goes, which is impacted, as I said, by where the FANGs go. So this gets pretty important on a couple of different levels. We want to talk about a couple of companies that I reported again overnight, just briefly. Mm-hmm. The two A's, Alphabet, which is Google, and Amazon. They both reported earnings. Those numbers were pretty stellar. Mm-hmm. The market wasn't particularly or completely in love with what came out. Just give us a very quick rundown on what's going on there, what the share price responses were, and what it means for Australia's tech sector in particular and our market in general.
So I think Alphabet, which is Google, as you said, reported earnings increase of 30%. I don't know how anybody would call that bad. That's a 30% increase. I think there's some, you know, that just for the heck of having concerns, their traffic acquisition cost, it looks like, which is essentially the cost to bring eyeballs to their search sites, basically, has gone up. I'd suspect people like Apple are charging them as much as they can to bring those people to Google sites. Good for Apple. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, those sort of things play in people's mind, and, you know, people think, you know, okay, the cost is going up, and, you know, the profits are not going to grow as fast as, you know, one would think. But this is operating in a huge market. It's a market leader. I don't own the shares for different reasons, although, you know, it's looking tempting now to me. I just don't know what, you know, what's not to like. Again, you know, the thing to remember is that these shares have gone up a lot over the last couple of years. So, you know, a little bit of a, you know, few percentage going down really doesn't seem like a big deal. At least that's my take on Alphabet. There's a bigger challenge, I think, with, you know, regulation and governments and so on. It's so pervasive, and it's also about advertising. It's about tracking people, and it's about users, you know, people's privacy. I think those sort of things are going to continue to weigh, but I think they are well placed to sort of navigate those things. That's my take on Alphabet. Amazon, I mean, again, Amazon had very good, I would say very, very good quarter. They're north of, so if you think about Amazon's retail, it in the US, it was up 30%. I mean, what's not to like about 30% growth in retail? Its web services division was up 46%. I mean, you know, the Amazon Web Services continues to be the market leader. I mean, number two, I think, is Microsoft Azure. Again, those two companies are doing phenomenally well. If there was one blip, and this is not a blip, new blip, this has been around for some time, is, Amazon is still struggling internationally. I mean, international revenue growth was about 14% or so.
Yeah.
And that's because there's strong competition in various parts of the world. Those incumbents that are in these various parts of the world, you know, they've looked at Amazon and followed that business model. And basically, you know, while Amazon was busy building its business in the US, these guys build their business in their respective countries or, you know, in geographies. And it's become, you know, once you become entrenched, it is a hard game to fight. But, you know, it doesn't mean that Amazon is going to fight it. So, again, Amazon was up, I think, this year, like something like 50%. If it's down, it was, and again, during the trading day, it was up like 7%. If it's probably down 7% in after hours, so it's not really, you know, it's neither here, neither there. Amazon, I own. I think it's a great company. Overall, I think it's great, fantastic.
I say I own Alphabet shares and Amazon shares, by the way, so horribly conflicted. I agree with that thought. I have to say, I think 14% would be very disappointing for the Amazon business and certainly as a shareholder. Partly because I think, to your point, Amazon would see itself as wanting to dominate those markets where it has stiff competition. My other thought, I guess, is probably just that I would have expected that Amazon plus the competitors as a group should be able to grow up faster than that rate. And so to some degree, it's not like a supermarket retailer when, you know, Woolies and Coles and IGA and Aldi and Costco, the market already exists. You can't really grow that market. There's only so much going on. In the world of online commerce, as much as it's about $1.05 in the US, it's much, much less almost entirely in the rest of the world. And so that kind of the structural change that's happening in the retail landscape, I would have expected that even if Amazon's getting beaten by its competitors, that even the second player should be able to grow up faster than that, right? As it transfers people from offline retail to online retailer. So, who am I to criticize Jeff Bezos? I would imagine there's a little bit of, if not soul searching, just a bit of reflection going on at the Amazon HQ to see if they can do something with that business. Just give it a bit of extra juice.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, what I'd say is that one of the things with Amazon is basically, you know, Amazon's value proposition is price, right? It's not selling you the fancy new gadget. It doesn't have a distinguishing aspect. So therefore, if somebody is well entrenched, like let's say India and Flipkart, then it becomes hard because they're well entrenched. They've got the distribution. They've got the people. They've got the network effects. It is hard to beat back that sort of competition. And those people have got other big backers, you know, like Walmart and so on. So I think Amazon is doing okay and it's trying its best, and those markets are going to grow over time. You know, they're significantly smaller online, relative to the others. So even if it accelerates from 14 to like, you know, 20%, I'll take that as a shareholder. I would not have any problems with that.
No,
I'll take it. Of course, if it is more, I'll be happier, but I will not complain at 20%. You know, I'm not as greedy as you are being here.
You just
want them to win everything.
I do. But I
actually don't want them to win everything, because if they win everything, that's actually not good for the world overall, because, you know, then they're going to jack up prices at some point. So
I've seen the movie WALL-E. By and large, is the model for Amazon. It will be something to everybody for everything.
I just don't think that you should win in everything. And actually, you and I have the bet, right? I think, you know, the bet is that Apple is going to win over them, and so far it's beating them. So, you know, that's
not
the bet.
Not a chance.
We'll continue with that. We'll continue with the greatest company being Apple, and Amazon can have number two position.
Was it 5 years we said? Was that the?
I mean, right now they're handedly losing.
I'm pretty sure you gave me a 2-to-1 deal on Amazon being bigger than Apple in 5 years. Is that right? Do I remember that
correctly? I just don't remember exactly what the deal is.
We'll find the tape. All right.
We'll check that out.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, let's move on. I want to dip into the full mailbag a little bit. I think it's been a tough week for many investors. And I want to give a shout out to Francesco Alighieri. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Francesco. I'm almost certainly not, but not for lack of effort. My apologies, mate, if I'm getting that wrong. He tweeted us during the week and he said, "Not so long ago, a day like today on the market would have terrified me. Now I'm a fool. Today was bargain hunting day. Thanks, fools." That's to some degree a bit of self-congratulation. I'm not doing that just to blow our own trumpet. What I love about that is that we've helped some people, and hopefully more than just Francesco, on our podcast, on our free site, and our premium paid services, to really think about what the market does, how it works, and how to think about that sort of stuff. And I guess, as I said, it's a bit of trumpet blowing probably. I wanted to mention Francesco because it was a really cool thing that he tweeted. But also, I think, to as an exhortation to the rest of our listeners and our readers and members, just to remember that, you know, this is very easy to be swayed by the market. One of the reasons I hate the concept of the correction is it leads people to believe that what happened in the past, even on a subconscious level, is what's going to happen in future. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about, you know, okay, there's a correction on the market's down, therefore, and most people extrapolate and say, therefore, I shouldn't invest because the market's falling. And Francesco's got it exactly right. When the market is falling, as long as you believe in the market, as long as you believe in the companies you're buying, as long as you think the future is brighter than the past, if you liked a company 2 days ago, you should like it a whole lot more if it's 5 or 10% cheaper today, right? So there's nothing in the price action that should tell you anything. Mm. Maybe, by the way, some of these companies do deserve to have their prices fallen. So I'm not saying just because the price has fallen every company in the ASX, you should go and buy everything. That would be silly. But as an idea, if you start to think about, hey, you know what? Some of these stocks have been put on sale. Some of these companies are now cheaper than they were a week ago or a month ago. Man, the market's down 10%. If you thought it was worth buying stocks a month ago, you're getting extra value for your money today. You don't get that very often in investing. So I love Francesco's point. And Fools, as you're listening, I hope you'll also maybe just buy in a little bit to Francesco's point, to our point. Think about the long term. If Amazon, if Apple, as much as I hate to say it, if Woolworths or Wesfarmers or CSL or BHP or News Corp or, you know, any of these companies, if they've got brighter futures than today, and if their prices are attractive relative to today, then this is the time you want to be excited about buying shares, not running scared from the room because the markets are screaming 160 billion wiped off the
market. Wiped off. Wiped off. It's all gone.
All right.
Motley Fool Money.
Mate, I'm going to, I hate myself for doing this. We got a question during the week about, well, a company that you've expressed some, what do we say? Love? Lust? Passion?
Passion? Let's go with passion. Lust. Well, let's keep the lust.
I'm not even sure if passion is strong enough a sense, mate. I've got to say, this is the company that I think you would crawl over hot coals to buy shares of, and that is Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a question from Peter Dulamov, and again, I'm probably mispronouncing your name, Peter, so at least you're in good company with Francesco, but between the two of you, hopefully I've got something roughly right. I'm pretty sure I pronounced Peter right, so I'm 1 for 4 at least on names. Mm. Peter says, "Hey, Doc and Scott, a question for the next podcast. Why is there so much talk re-Tesla Q? Now, let me just stop there for a second. The code he's given us, so Tesla, the code is TSLA.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, why is there so much talk about TSLAQ? Google it and saw lots of explanation with OTC, BB, and pink sheets. Man, what are they for and how different? Love the podcast." So thank you, Peter, for your kind words. Again, if you tell us you love the podcast, you're almost certain to be read out on air because, hey, we like a bit of self-congratulation.
Exactly, yeah.
And look, it saves us having to do it, which is always nice if someone else does it for us.
Mm-hmm.
Peter's asking a couple of questions there. So the second part about the OTC, BB, and the pink sheets is a little bit different to the other part of the question for what it's worth. But let's take them in order. Actually, no, do them in reverse order. I'm going to make you wait on Tesla for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
OTC, BB. You know what that stands for?
I have no idea what
it's the over-the-counter bulletin boards.
Oh, okay.
So in the US, there's a whole lot of different ways you can buy shares, a whole lot of different markets you can buy shares on. So we know there's the New York Stock Exchange, the NYSE, and there's the NASDAQ. So we're familiar with those. There's also the Amex, the American Exchange.
Right, yeah.
And there's what they call over-the-counter or pink sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes way back to the bad old days before the internet, where you could actually literally buy and sell shares literally over the counter, and the stock quotes were printed on pink paper, hence the pink sheets.
Wow.
And these were normally companies that were really, really, really cheap. Now, in Australia, we're used to lower average share prices than the US. Mm. Somewhere between 20 cents and $2 is kind of average for Australia, maybe a bit more now.
Mm.
In the US, anything under $5 is traditionally considered a penny stock, which is a penny dreadful, which is one you wouldn't want to go near.
Yeah.
Now, that's the price aren't particularly useful other than that tends to be the categorization. We all know that it's not about the price per share, but it's the size in market cap that matters. But in any case, those cheap shares that weren't a high enough price per share or liquid enough to trade were done over the counter and on literally pieces of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the background to that. But Tesla Q is a little bit different, Doc. Mm. So TSLAQ, it's on Twitter. It's all over Twitter. It's all over the internet. What is the story with Tesla Q?
Yeah, so I'll be honest here. You know, before this question actually showed up, I've seen this many times on Twitter, and I just had, you know, not bothered actually what it is,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the bears, the people who short this company,
right.
have been using it. So as we, you know, unfortunately had to Google it, which I don't like doing. Bing actually did not work for this, which, so I'm giving Google some credit here. What it seems like is that when a company is likely to go bankrupt, the Q is added by the US SEC to the code, so that people know that this is going to go the bankrupt. So you know, this is this is what the people who are, so Tesla is one of the highest.
Tesla's going bankrupt is what it's saying.
It's basically what they're the shorts are trying to say, that Tesla's going bankrupt.
And to be clear, Tesla Q doesn't actually exist.
Does not exist.
Right. At least not yet.
Not yet.
Is it going to?
Well, as I've said before in this podcast, I think, you know, Tesla is probably the most innovative company of the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's by far, in my opinion.
Hard to argue that. I think someone's trying to literally revolutionize.
It's the most innovative company.
Energy and transportation. One full swoop. That's pretty good.
And I think the results now, the recent quarter results, were what I would call, you know, a step change. Mm-hmm. You know, they delivered 80,000 vehicles, $6.9 billion or something like that in revenue,
mm-hmm.
and delivered a profit and increased its balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So the balance sheet grew to now $3 billion, and they've basically said that, you know, we are going to keep growing our balance sheet, and we're going to pay down our convertible debt, and we don't need to raise capital. And I have just noticed that they have registered 50,000 vehicle Model 3s, VINs, which is VIN is vehicle identification numbers, just in October alone. That equals essentially the entire delivery of the last quarter. So I think we are up for some tremendous momentum in terms of vehicle delivery production. They're working through all the stuff. I think, you know, anybody who drives this car basically says that they're not going to drive anything else ever again. I think this is fundamentally going to change a lot of things for various reasons. The way they're doing self-driving is really different. The amount of data they're collecting and the amount of data they're going to collect as more and more of their cars go on road. Nobody's going to have this data. They're developing their own chips. They're developing their own neural networks. And this is just the car side. And, you know, and quietly, the energy side is just growing. And that's, in my opinion, just as big a market, probably bigger market. So this is a company with, it fits what David Gardner would call the six signs of a rule breaker brilliantly, which we should talk about some other day. And I think this is, you know, I hold it. I own a lot of it. And I think people should buy it a little bit, at least, just to partake in revolution.
I'm officially sorry I asked.
It's okay. It's okay.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah.
So are you saying that there's no possible chance now Tesla goes broke? Is that what you're saying?
I think the chance of Tesla...
Put it for me.
Okay. I'll put a very, very low percentage probability that, you know, if there is a recession or something bad happens and, you know, the demand sucks out. The one thing to remember is that most people who are buying are well-off people. Right now, Tesla is not selling a cheap version car yet.
Except that you were saying some people are transferring from like a Honda Civic to a Tesla. So
there are people who are upgrading who have, you know, the ability to upgrade. Right. Maybe they have another car or, you know, maybe they have two cars and they're upgrading from a Honda Civic. So a lot of people are upgrading from smaller vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
What Elon Musk said in the conference call is that looking at what people are upgrading from, it looks like they could be doing 1 million sales just for the Model 3 annually, which would put them essentially in the ballpark with the Golf, which is what you drive.
I do.
A very nice car. But, you know, once you drive a Model 3, you're never going to drive a Golf. You know, Golf is basically toast.
My wife does have a ride on a Tesla, possibly as a next car. I think that might be a little bit of wishful thinking. I'm not paid that much
I mean, I have a reservation. I have not, you know, I've got a reservation. I would buy the Tesla the moment I can. I've also looked at some used Teslas, you know, trying to get. So, you know, our next car is definitely going to be a Tesla.
Look look out for our first video podcast where we take a drive with Doc in his new Model 3 at some point. Are we talking next year, this stage, or 2020?
So actually, there was a date given, and they said the APAC is probably going to be Q2. So that's Elon Musk. Oh, Elon Musk has now started actually keeping promises.
Let's not say that too early, mate.
Yeah, that's, you know, he has actually kept promises this time, so I'm actually impressed. So I just assume that Q2 means Q3, which basically means about a year out.
All right.
Or maybe 9 months out.
Our first video podcast will be in December next year with a drive in Doc's Tesla. Okay. What do you reckon, dude? Do we have a deal?
I think so. Well, you know, we're talking. We might get something else. We might get a used Tesla, something.
Oh,
X or S, if we can get a used one.
I love the S. I like the 3. I hate the style of the X. It looks like a fridge. I saw one the other day. It's a white one. The kind of flat, sort of square front of the nose. Looks like a fridge coming.
You know, my daughter.
Yeah.
If there's a car that you'd want her to buy, it'll be the X. She loves the Falcon doors.
Oh, the Falcon doors are cool.
And
I'll give you that.
She loves the fact that a door actually automatically opens for you. Automatically opens for you when you stand near it. I mean, who doesn't like to be lazy? I love to be lazy. Just go there and it opens for you. You get in, it closes for you too.
It's just ugly. Yes is so much more. Yes is beautiful. The X is ugly.
Would you care if the bloody door closes for you? It is just awesome.
And if that's all you want, give me a couple hundred grand, I'll give you a door.
I don't know. I mean, that's just, you know, the car that drives itself, that can close its door, that's the way to go. I mean, this is the car of the future.
Teslas are very, very cool. I'm looking forward to having one. It won't be an X, I'll tell you that now. All right, we done?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Phil, before we go, don't forget you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast, and we think you should, through your iTunes app or your favorite Android podcast app if you're one of the leading edge people like me with an Android phone. And if you like what we're doing, please do give us a big 5-star rating on iTunes or that network. It helps other people find the podcast, gives us some feedback, and pushes up the charts just a little bit, which we always appreciate because it means more people can find us. And it kind of... Yeah, that's not a bad thing, right? We all want to be heard by a few more people, and we think we've got a message that we want to get out to people for free. That's not a bad deal. And don't forget, you can get a little dose of foolishness straight to your inbox, emails from yours truly and others, by going to www.fool.com.au/MMM. That's it for this week's Motley Fool Money. We'll be back next week with another dose of foolish insight. Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.